Did you really drag me in here to listen to another one of your podcasts?
Dude, you're embarrassing me in front of the wizards.
You want a juice box and some string cheese?
Do you really have that?
Fourth wall break inside a fourth wall break. That's like 16 walls.
Flawless victory.
Mother, what's wrong with me?
Darling, I don't have to answer to you. I'm Batman.
Why'd you open your bong hole, you smelly hippie?
It's clobbering time.
This is the men who look bad in spandex? That's disgusting. Are you seriously calling it that?
What is up, Max?
Hello, my fellow brother in comic books.
How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Good to be joined by the sixth Ninja Turtle. I'm the fifth one. It's the Men Who Look Bad in Spandex podcast. That's Steve. What up, Steve?
Oh, not a lot, man. You know.
Yeah, I'm Max. Hey, everybody. Hey. Nice. Yeah. All right, dispensing with the pleasantries, my man, what is up, brother? It's the start of the summer. It's a huge slate for the next 3 months. Kids are out of school. They're dying to smell some comic book ink in your store at the corner of First and Orchard, right above Cameo Hairstyling Salon. My man, you're excited as well, I would imagine.
I mean, well, you know, summertime usually brings company events, and that usually leads to chaos, so I mean, as a thing, some of the best events came out of the summer events, really. I mean, Blackest Night was really great.
Infinite
Civil War is pretty good.
Infinite Crisis. You know? I liked Infinite Crisis. Original Crisis on Infinite Earths came out. Was King in Black, was it last summer, 2 summers ago on the House of Ideas side?
I'm going to say, you know, it feels like it was 2, but it might have only been 1. But yeah, it was another one that was,
Are you going to hit us here with a sneaky peeky of what's coming up? You got the word on some crossover goods that we need to get our hands on or at least be reading in the next few months, man? Is that what you were getting at, or were you being cryptic for no reason?
I mean, I might have been. I would say if you're an 80s kid, then you want to get Void Rivals. Get Void Rivals. If you're an 80s kid, then that book's a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, as a thing.
Robert Kirkman's
work. I thought where I was leading, but all those did come into a circle, so yeah.
Yeah, man, that is really fantastic. How long has it been since Kirkman has done anything new or taken on writing duties like this?
Well, I mean, I guess last book that was like a new piece for him, oh gosh, would have been, not Outcast. There's one after that. He did Outcast, that was kind of about possession, sort of.
Hey, fun.
What was the other one called? Shoot. There's another one that deals with alternate universe reached by frequency change. So if you could change your frequency in your body or whatever, you get there. There's an event that happens that causes an explosion that leads a bunch of people being trapped there. And then several years later, we start trying to rescue them. Oh, Oblivion Song. That took a minute.
Wow, that was amazing, Steve. That's like your superpower.
It's like, I'm trying to remember the parts of the story to figure out what the name was.
Like, you just have to mutter a few lines of the story, and then your recall is instantaneous. It's not total recall, I would say. But
I mean, that's a different story altogether.
Yeah, I would say you are definitely, yeah, that's, if you had some sort of superpower, that would be it.
Give Dan a curse.
Yes,
give
indeed.
A random memory.
Yeah, yeah, that is the eidetic memory, my friend. Yeah, you're great at parties. Definitely really good at charades, probably. Trivia, don't even get you started, right?
I mean, I do, yeah.
Yeah, but when it comes to some other things.
Well, it's been a while since Oblivion Song was happening as far as saying it, so it's kind of on a, end break. So well,
that's why
it was really good what was happening, I mean, as far as the series is concerned.
But that's why you're excited about this new stuff from Kirkman, right? That's why, I mean, I think it's got everybody kind of in a buzz. I know a lot of members, a lot of nooks and crannies of the industry are definitely going to be all over it, and Top 5 is one of those.
Well, sure. Yeah, as far as, like, series are concerned, I think that stuff will be, again, like I said, it's a niche for whatever, depending on what you like, there's, like, everything. There's a niche for everything, so if it's in your wheelhouse, then it'll be fantastic. Otherwise, it probably won't matter. So, you know.
Well, it is really cool. I mean, I get flashbacks from what you told me, my friend. And I know you were in the super secret meeting with Kirkman. You were right there wiping the spit from his boots. And you were probably You were probably a little bit more in depth than me, but it's definitely got like a, I don't know, I want to say ROM Space Knight feel, maybe a little mixture with like, you know, Masters of the Universe. Am I way off or?
Well, I mean, concept wise, you're not in the wrong wheelhouse. I mean, flavors, that's probably as much as I should say.
Oh, oh, Steve, you I mean, are truly right locked. You are.
The flavors are not quite the right flavor.
This is stonewalling, man. You're just stonewalling. I like it. I like it, man. This is nice. I've never had a chance to try to needle information out of you, my friend. I'll probably have to buy you some sort of alcoholic beverage off the old podcast. But as soon as I do, man. Sorry, that's terrible, man. I'm kidding. My evil laugh needs a little bit of work. But yeah. Anyway, that's exciting. So grab Void Rivals at top five all summer long, man. What is the month? Is it this month? It's out? It's printed? It's first issue, first run, ready to go?
Oh, for the release date on it?
Yeah.
Let's see. It comes out in June.
Okay.
So we're not, we're like a week, yeah, we're a week away, I guess.
Yeah.
One second. What's the actual date? I can answer that. I just don't remember that. One second. Should be something I actually know, right?
Steve, there's a lot of things I don't know. I don't really pretend that I do know them. Oh, wait. Yes, I do. I'm sorry. It's probably my prerogative as a person who thinks themselves smart. Has never actually been told I'm smart, but definitely has an over an abundance of confidence about that subject. So I feel you, brother. It's like your eidetic memory, you know? It's totally like that. It's just kind of something that happens.
Right. June 14th is the release date.
Ooh, nice.
So not more than 2.5 weeks away right now, which is good.
Okay, well, good. Well, I guess that's something to look forward to. But between now and then, man, there's going to be some stuff that you're going to want to maybe pick up at the shop or maybe think about, sure. Talk about. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on the way. Obviously, Void Rivals is going to be big. It's going to be fun. You can get it all at top five, of course. But, I mean, ooh, pardon me. I mean, you're talking as far as summer events go. I think that a lot of people have been aligning a lot of pieces throughout whatever your favorite comic book is, whether it's Marvel, DC, Image or not. I can definitely attest to Image, as it's one of my favorite publishing houses. The things that McFarlane has been doing across all five of his Spawn books, I want to say, they're all starting to come together. The strings are being tightened, and it's been fun. It's been a nice throwback to his original Spawn days. Kind of simple, like simplified writing. Obviously, it got a little complicated, and you know, Al Simmons being gone, and then not, and then being back, and then the roles of Heaven and Hell, and those universes, of course, have been, I guess, reset and re-explained and reimagined these times. But I think bringing everybody together in a shared universe has been a great idea for McFarlane, whether it's Gunslinger, Medieval Spawn, and more. And all the Spawns that kind of have made their way into the lore, I should say. Yeah, I do know that there's something coming up in the Image thing. I don't know what it is, but I'm planning on getting it. And I know you, Steve, know plenty more about all the other stuff going on, man.
Well, as far as like things in the foothold of things, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff getting ready to come out over the summer, and a bunch of new books getting ready to release. There's several other crossovers. I mean, okay, so there's two that have a similar flavor. One that I feel like makes sense, the other one I feel like should be awesome. So as far as crossover events, we're going to be getting a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles meets Street Fighter. So that makes sense to me. I think that makes sense as a thing. How we haven't had it happen before, maybe it did. I don't remember if it did or not, to be honest. I don't think it did. But as a thing, it makes sense to happen, right? So do a miniseries of that.
Steve, you said some words, and you know what you had me at, right? Yeah, you know. You know exactly what
turtles
you had
maybe?
Me at.
I don't know.
You said Turtles meet Street Fighter. I dropped everything I was doing. I was kind of staring off into space and getting ready for, you know, your answer, and then I just came right back to it, man. I was like, did he just say what I thought he said? That's good stuff.
Right. So there's that one. And then the other one, which also has a turtle flavoring, which I think is just awesome.
Is?
Don't know if it makes sense or not, but it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles meets Stranger Things.
Oh, my God.
From Netflix. Right, exactly, right?
What?
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't seem like something that should exist, but it is something that's going to exist.
What?
Awesome.
Wow. Yeah. Very awesome.
So I think both those should be neat. I mean, if you're Turtle fans, regardless, there should be a piece in there that you'd like anyway. But the whole idea of that, those two franchises bridging is crazy.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Is that the first time Stranger Things has graced the comic book page?
Not as a franchise, no. I mean, they have their own books as far as series. I mean, Stranger Things, so Dark Horse has been putting Stranger Things out now, oh gosh, I don't know, several years.
As
far as series, like the way they work, for the most part, the way they work is they take place between seasons and aside the seasons. So they're not, so unlike the Days of Yore or Old, is that how you say that? Or Yore? Days of Yore.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly, that's exactly how you say that. Go ahead.
Right? Where it would just be like, oh, here's Empire Strikes Back, and it's the comic version of Empire Strikes Back. So it's the same, it's just the comic version of it. Same thing with Return of the Jedi, same thing with a bunch of Indiana Jones stuff, same thing with Mandalorian. They're basically show just retold in the comic. And as far as visuals are concerned, I mean, that's all fantastic. Where Stranger Things isn't the show retold. So the very first book, first series, they're all miniseries. The very first miniseries is just called Stranger Things, and it is a companion to season one. So with the way the show works, in a way the first issue works, there's a lot of similarities in the very first single book. As far as the story is concerned, we start out with the boys playing D&D, and we get to the point where they all split up to go home, and we follow Will home on the bike. And in the show, he goes missing, and the rest of the show, we follow around Mike and the gang trying to figure out what happened to Will, and, you know, do we have the whole fake dead body, and a bunch of other stuff, and we see Will occasionally, like, hiding in the dugout or something, right?
Uh-huh.
So the book, the comic book, it follows Will.
Oh.
So okay. We see the other side of things that were happening. And so, like, the best example is in the house when his mom's figuring out how to hang up the Christmas lights.
Mm-hmm.
We see the other side of that in the comic.
Oh. Okay.
So it's a extension of the first season.
Ah. Like a companion, a companion piece.
Yeah, straight up companion, exactly.
Oh, man. Okay.
The second two books, they were slightly different.
Uh-huh.
Not to cut you off, man, but you know.
Hey, no, you're going, baby. You know more about this than I do. Keep doing it, man.
Once I fall in the rabbit hole, it's hard for me to get out. it's so hard. I mean, it's not even that deep a hole. It's terrible. So we have two more books after that. One was called Into the Fire, and the other one was called Six. And Into the Fire, and I don't remember which one happened first. I'm pretty sure it was Into the Fire. It kind of deals with the kids that were in season two that whenever Eleven ran off and was punk rock metal for one episode,
mm-hmm.
we had all the masked kids running around with her.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of deals with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an expansion too, but it, that's mostly what that book deals with. The third book is called Six. In Six, during that same season, we saw a bunch of other kids that were being experimented on, right?
Yeah.
This is number six of the group.
Uh-huh.
So that's what that particular book's about, is that character. Then we get to it's the fourth one. It's called, if I remember correctly, it's called Science Camp. There might be one more in there that I'm forgetting, but I'm pretty sure this is right. And Science Camp takes place after season two, but before season three. So, you know, in season three, we find out Toothless has a girlfriend, supposedly. Well, this is a story about meeting the girlfriend.
I remember.
And
he goes, yeah.
Kind of Camp Crystal Lakey. You know?
Kind of camp.
A little bit of murder in the woods.
Okay. These kids, so, they lead interesting lives.
Yeah, man, right. It's wild. There's one happening right now that's a little more dealing with, it's a little more dealing with Russia. And so as far as, like, pieces, they're all pieces that are bridged to the book, or to the show, sorry. So they're all extensions, so like add-ons and pieces that go in the middle. And they did one that was called, actually this one, I'm surprised I didn't mention this to you, I should have. There was a Stranger Things D&D.
Nice. Right? Roll me some D20s, baby.
Heck yeah. So what it really is, now that one, it's written by two different people. So Jody Houser wrote at least the first four of those. The new one's got a different writer on it, but Jody did the first four. And she co-wrote D&D Stranger Things with a dude named Jim Zub. Jim Zub, both of them are fantastic. Jody's great. Jim Zub's great. Jim's been writing the D&D comics over at IDW, I don't know, like the last 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the dude's been doing a fair amount of D&D. So the book, being it's a mixture, what we have happening is the game the kids have been playing through this show has all been connected. Like the game itself has been.
Okay.
Just like a really long campaign, right?
Yeah, okay.
And so the comic book is a mixture of their characters from the game playing the game and elements of real life happening around to tell us where we are in the game and time.
Yeah, that's absolutely spectacular.
So there's elements from the show, and then there's elements that are the game itself.
Oh, man, I liked all of it, and I did see the show, and that last piece right there, because I'm a fan of TTRPG, baby's tabletop role-playing game. As a matter of fact, I think you might like this, Steve. Last night, I play D&D every week, so last night I was with my group, and I'm a DM, I built a heavy death metal bard band made up of drow, and it was pretty fun, man. And I would be really interested to see what they played. I mean, that's just kind of a niche thing for me, but... I don't know, man. That's a really cool thing. I didn't know that they did comic adaptations. So to know all that and to have this many volumes, it makes sense in hindsight after you tell me about it. But that's pretty cool. Now that they're bringing the turtles in, man, the turtles are crossover with just about anybody, huh, Steve?
You know, at this point, they have a handful of them. I mean, the Power Ranger crossover.
Yep.
The Batman crossed over three or four times.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, the turtles get around. They have a fun time.
Yeah, they do.
A bunch of party guys.
Yeah, they probably bring pizza and beer. Have they? Wait, no, they're teenagers. My bad. It's in the name.
We don't talk about that part.
It's in the name. Sorry. I apologize. I was, Splinter's not a real attentive parent, apparently. Anywho, that's pretty cool. Those are always fun to look out for, man. Definitely, dude. And then there's a bevy of summer stuff coming out on, you know, the screens as well as, you know, we get one more. We get the Marvels. Is that our last Marvel movie? Is that right of the year?
Oh, man. Well, do we count Spider-Verse because it's technically Sony?
Ooh.
We have Miles Morales is in the Spider-Verse part one.
Yeah, let's
turn the Spider-Verse into.
Let's lump it in
I don't
there.
Remember what the title is.
Let's lump it in there. Let's lump it in there indeed. Yeah.
So, big time. Yeah, with movie releases or whatever for Marvel, with those two, we have the one in the summer, which actually, no, Spider-Verse is like 2.5 weeks away.
Yeah. I'm geeked.
Towards the beginning of June.
It's going to be a good one.
I mean, yeah, the first movie was just so well done.
So good.
And, like, the trailers for the second one are so... They're just so much more of the same. Like, they just look awesome. Like,
right. Yeah. Do you know what kind of animation style that actually is? It's impressive. I'm not
I
sure
have
if
no
they...
idea.
It's like a rotoscope on top of a digital overlay, from what I understand. So they use a camera that kind of shoots and adds this effect that you can kind of, in post-production, put on. And it looks like that almost really authentic comic book character coming off the page. That's why I think it looks so visually stunning. It looks like this comic, yeah, this it's not like rounded or there's no like over exaggerated muscles. It's got its own style. It's very stylized in the way a comic would be and very brought to life that way. It sucked me right in, man. And now that they've brought Spider-Man 2099 into the mix, because Miguel O'Hara was one of my favorites, he had the panache, the cool. I like the 2099 universe, man. Did you like the 2099 universe, Steve?
Oh, yeah. When it comes to 2099 as a series, there were a few of them that I wasn't the biggest fan of, because we did a bevy of books, right? I mean, we had Spider-Man, we had the X-Men, we had Doctor Doom,
Hulk,
we had
Punisher,
character named Ravage.
Ravage.
And then we had the Punisher.
Ghost Rider.
Which was a cult. And then, yeah, right, Ghost Rider. We had that Hulk book.
Yep.
So, like, there's a whole handful of different ones. I mean, of the group of them, Spider-Man, of course, was the most successful just in general. Dr. Doom was cool. His time-traveled Doom. Well, not time-traveled. It was Carbon Froze woke up in the future. I guess we made him fry for Futurama.
But he did update his armor to be totally chrome, so that was straight fly. Yeah. That was just banging. I mean, that was pretty sick.
Cool. That first cover with all the shiny, edges, it was great.
It was really nice. Spider-Man and X-Men, I thought, were the two strongest books to come out of that run there, because I thought Spider-Man was well done with just, you know, really getting Miguel O'Hara a place. And he kind of became, as all Spider-Men kind of do, the faces of the house, you know, the Marvel. Because, I mean, look at Miles Morales, he's become kind of synonymous with Marvel Comics. He's definitely probably on the same level Peter Parker is as not only a pop culture icon, but somebody who carries what the Marvel people definitely do, not only with their movies, their books, everything. I mean, he's such a moneymaker. He's such a great IP, all that good stuff. And it's just part of the Spider-Man lore, and that's probably why I put Miguel O'Hara up there. And I'm excited to see actually what Oscar Isaac does with him, because he's one of also my favorite actors, and now he gets to do the voice.
Well, and that's cool, too. I mean, he did that tiny bit of voice at the end of the previous movie, so he's returning the role, and the commercials make it sound so cool. And like, the dude, he does a good job as far as acting and presenting himself just in general. I mean, Oscars, I mean, we don't talk about him playing Apocalypse, but you know, everything else has been just fine.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that was the X-Men movies, man, that's a frustrating conversation to be had. He was Moon Knight, in case you were wondering why he's so familiar, Oscar Isaac. He was your guy, so apparently he's no stranger to being anybody and everybody in a comic book universe. Flash is on the way as well. That one looks like a lot of fun, the old big reboot.
Oh, yeah.
Thing coming up.
I mean, did you mean Batman? Because it kind of looks like a Batman movie.
I don't know. It could be a Superman. could be a Superman flick if you're looking at it the right way as well.
I mean, that's true. Everything we've seen for it so far looks really cool.
Yeah.
And, like, as a farewell to whatever, or a bridging point between universes, I mean, I'm impressed with the performance that we get from Ezra Miller in those commercials, and it just makes me think that maybe the kid's gifted enough as an actor, just is not very good at real life.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but, you know, he's getting help, so I guess we'll see what that does.
Ezra's behavior aside, my question to you at this point was, did Michael do that for a paycheck? Is Keaton going to do Beetlejuice 2 for a paycheck? Or did he appreciate getting back into the cowl where you can't bend your neck? You know, you got to have people feed you something to drink and eat, because you literally have to turn to the right. You have no peripheral vision in that thing, I would imagine. And do you think he went back just because he enjoyed that role so much, or do you think he got a nice check stroked? Or maybe a bit of both, right?
I'm going to say probably a bit of both. I mean, when it comes to returning to a character, I don't think... I mean, Michael's been in the business long enough at this point in the game. I think him returning to those roles, part of it is nostalgia and just for enjoyment himself, but it's an iconic thing, man. Like, as far as caring is concerned, you know the paycheck is part of it, but, I mean, he was already playing Batman in that Batgirl movie, and even though that thing has turned into something that we're never going to see, or if we do wind up seeing it, it's way down the road as some kind of weird offering in the world or something. Now, I'm not saying it's the right choice, because I don't think it was, and as far as a thing, it doesn't make sense to me as far as having legs. I get Flashpoint having legs, because it can lead to a bunch of other stuff and be used as a bridge. That Batgirl movie, I'm sure it would probably be okay, but it just doesn't have any place else to go.
Yeah,
I get the dropping it, because like they were trying to make a Batman Beyond, but the issue there is that you make Michael Keaton Batman, that connects it to the Tim Burton universe, and if that's connected to the Tim Burton universe, there's nowhere for it to go.
Yeah, I guess.
So,
I guess our suspension of belief is now to the point where it's almost hyper suspension of disbelief, because now we can't even differentiate between the fact that Michael Keaton actually isn't Batman, He's like just a real person, human being guy. But anyway, that's a great point also to discuss later. Probably not on a podcast, probably with your therapist if you really, really want to get to the root of that.
You know.
Sorry. I should say he looks like he's enjoying himself. Michael does. And I'm excited because I want to see how much of the Flashpoint universe makes it in. You know, the Superman angle with the Supergirl angle now, what I've seen from the previews, is neat. It's different, as in, you know, the nature of the Flashpoint was. Spoiler alert, in the Flashpoint, Clark Kent, as a baby Kal-El, was found by the government and held in secret. So I don't know what exactly from that really wonderful story by Geoff Johns we'll make it in. I mean, there's a lot of dark elements if you're talking about the book, Steve. But I don't know, because do you think we'll get some Aquaman? Do we get Gal Gadot and Jason Momoa in cameos? Because I know they haven't shown us everything that they have planned in Flashpoint, this movie coming up. Is that too out of bounds? Am I just reaching here as an incredible fanboy? Because to connect, like you say, you put Michael Keaton in, it's in. But if you bring Jason Momoa and Gal Gadot in, not only do you do that, but you draw parallels to Shazam and everything else you might have planned, and everything is on the table. And doesn't that just give James Gunn and Peter Safran more tools in the toolbox?
I mean, kind of. When it comes to layout there, I think that the difference between those two things is they are so polarizingly different in Flashpoint. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying that they're so different in those two aspects because they're basically both warmongers, and neither one were painted in a happy...
No.
In this sake in the world, right. I think more likely we would err on the side of caution with that simply because Aquaman 2 is getting ready to come out, and even though it is Flashpoint and you'd think, you know, our audience would be able to differentiate between the two realities of things, I think it's more of a slippery slope than it is a possibility. So I would say no as far as a appearance for either version of those two characters as those characters.
Well, then let me kind of piggyback on that, Steve. Does the nightmare sequence that Zack Snyder imagined get any more run or legs whatsoever, considering its ties to Ezra Miller's Flash, as well as Zack Snyder's overall arching four-issue Justice League movie run he decided? Because you know he wanted to do, like, four movies.
Right.
You were the one who was telling me that stuff. So do you think that it circles back? Or do you think that's just completely, maybe it's out of left. Maybe I'm just, Steve, am I crazy? I'm crazy, huh? I'm crazy.
I don't think, well, the way things sit right this second, even if this movie makes a lot of money, what they've already made decisions to do moving-wise, it puts that out of bounds. Now, is it impossible? No. I mean, clearly it's not. Is it possible that Star Trek turns around, or not Star Trek, Star Wars turns around, and they're like, we got a Kelvin universe too, everybody. Sure. Do I think that's going to happen? No. No, I don't. Now, that's a whole different ball field to argue about, but as far as a thing, I don't think we see any more return to that stuff unless we do some other crazy Flashpoint 2, which we've had a couple sequels in the comic books, but
now,
I don't necessarily think this is built for that. I think this is more of a, once we see if anything sticks and how people respond to it, but we're already moving forward with other stuff.
Do you think... So, the executives have a number. Do you think all the suits, all the lawyers, all the people that probably don't actually have spines might actually be, you know, some sort of alien race in disguise as, you know, CEOs, as, you know, based on greed and all that stuff. Do they have a number that they have to hit and then they say, let's get this? Or do they just say, this was nice, James Gunn, you've got the reins.
Well, with the way things sit right now, even regardless of what happens with this movie as far as money is concerned,
like if it beats, like hypothetically, Steve, if it beats Endgame, final money.
Man, if it beats Endgame, oh, man. You know, I'm still going to say no.
Wow.
Not only because Even if it be in-game money-wise, let's just say that it does. Let's just say it does. The billions and billions of dollars in-game does. And let's say it does it in the weekend. Just in the opening weekend. The Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. At the end of the day there, the other issue is that we have other pieces already moving. And I'm sure contractually there's something going on there in the middle with Gunn and Saffron. They're both given jobs, and I imagine those jobs sit with a contract that has a out for the company, probably, but not an out that would be something they could just cut them off. And then you have to regulate bringing Zack Snyder back. And I'm not saying that Zack's, you know, too busy doing anything else not to come back to the DC Universe, because he's done it twice. I mean, that is unprecedented. I mean, we've talked about that before on the podcast. It's what he got to do with his movie is unprecedented as a thing. Do I think it'll happen twice? My gosh, man. If I being a betting man, I'd say no. But I've been wrong before, I mean, about things. I mean, at one point I was asked how far away I thought a Justice League movie was, and I was like, are you kidding me? And then, you know, they were like, no, we'll just do it tomorrow. And I was like, oh, are you kidding
right.
me?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I've been wrong before.
We all are, Steve. It's okay. We learn to live with it. That bitter taste in the back of your mouth, that's sweet, sweet disappointment.
Right.
I'm just kidding, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I think that there's an avenue for it and there's definitely people that want it, I think the grand scheme of it is it's already done so far down the road that this is going to probably be one of the last times we see any of those elements. And it's not that Zach doesn't go back and forth doing things. I mean, look at the Army of the Dead, right? We did the prequel that's about the robbery. Those are out of order, and as far as movies are concerned, I like them both just fine. They're both visually great. Batista's fine in the... Batista's good in the... oh, gosh, I just said the name of it. Now I can't remember the name of it. Army of the Dead? Is that right?
Yes.
Pretty sure that's right.
Zach and Batista have a good relationship for sure.
Right. So, like, when it comes to the prequel, the one about the thief, the prequel I almost liked better, which... There are a couple of things in the Army one that I, at the end that just bug me because it doesn't make sense timing-wise, but, you know, do your zombies how you want to do them. You know why? Because they're not real, so it doesn't matter.
Sure, and his Day of the Dead was probably his best zombie movie, if we're going to talk about that. But
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was really, really good, man. That's true. And, you know, beating dead horses and all that stuff, it's always fun on a podcast, I suppose, because I think that there's still hope. Really, there is, man. I feel like you might say things like that, but that's the beauty of it. You know, we get into these moments where we hold on to those slivers because people like James Gunn or Safran or executives from whichever large corporation that controls these IPs feed a sliver of chicken nuggets that we just gobble up with all the sauce, man, and we hold on to it from there. But that's not all that's coming out, man. We're looking at Secret Invasion. We're looking at the Marvels. Now, Steve... This is the one I've been kind of really excited about, but I haven't heard anything about at all. The Disney Plus animated show of X-Men 97. Now,
oh man,
is that supposed to be?
Yeah, there hasn't since the last batch of like weird announcements. There hasn't been anything since then, so I don't know. Like it may have been something pushed to 2024. I mean, after all that, there's the Captain America New World Order, and that's in 2024. Also, it's a year away from now.
Yeah, so. Wow, man, this, and I heard as well that Echo didn't come out the way Feige wanted it to, so he ordered a bunch of reshoots. Is this something that is plaguing a lot of these projects, you think? Is it the fatigue setting in on the production side?
I mean, maybe. It's hard to say what that really means in the grand scheme of the show, because with the elements that are in play to connect other things... If that's what he's talking about, then okay, there's pieces that need to fit better. But with as tied into things as he is, it's weird that it was something that didn't seem to sit in a way he thought the show was right, which is, it feels like something that you should have noticed partway through. So I get reshoots because something changes. A person has, you know, we have to be recast or something, or, you know, someone gets canceled, whatever. You know, there's things that cause reshoots all the time. Or something happened in another movie that breaks that. I mean, with stuff like that, it is a hard thing to keep track of. Again, where we're at in the franchise of movies, being all the other things that he has to juggle in life just in general, it's a little easier for us as an audience to be like, hey, no. You can't have them say this about that because it happened in this other scene. You know, like the people already know that answer. because the audience will notice it. And when you're busy juggling everything and being around all that stuff and the rewrites and the scripts that didn't go and the scripts that were replaced with other scripts, I can understand it becoming something where it gets more muddled for you as an individual, for sure.
What a mess.
I mean,
what an absolute mess.
Huge thing to try to carry around. I mean, as a thing in general, I mean, does that mean that you should hire a secondary? I mean, I'm just saying that probably both of us have a lot of free time for that. So, you know, if you want to hire somebody to come in and be like, no, the gloves are on in this scene and we have to have the gloves.
We are available. We are available, Marvel. Kev, if you're listening, hit us up. You know what? I find that highly ironic that you say that because maybe he does need a robotic version of himself that can keep all this crap together like they showed in She-Hulk. Or maybe flash forward like 30 years and there's like a secret vault at Disney that holds the cryogenically frozen head of Kevin Feige right next to Walt and he screams, "Please let me die." And they say, "Well, not until you're done, Kev."
Right?
Ooh,
oh my God. And he's like, "Where's my spider body?" And they're like, "No. Only Disney has the spider body. You don't get one."
That makes my heart smile. My man, that's fantastic. You know, we'll get to that stuff when it happens. I hope it happens. I know it'll probably more likely happen than not because, you know, Disney and its massive pull and reach in the media world. But, my man, let's get right back to, like, the way we love to wrap stuff up, of course, with comics, of course. All the stuff you can grab on the racks at Top 5 Comics off First and Orchard. Now, of course, Void Rivals sounds like a lot of fun, but Marvel seems to be tapping into a lesser-known 80s market from what I've been reading, my man. What do you know about this big, like, late 80s push with the Micronauts as well as, who else was it? Hang on. There's some other one. Micronauts and ROM. This massive, like, omnibus of everything coming back. What's the deal? Is that to sell toys, or is that to, you know, get more stuff out there for lesser-known characters?
Oh, man. Well, part of it's probably a mix of both things. It sounds like the concept is the properties, the way they originally existed, have been split up between companies now. And as far as, like, returns of things, now that we have IDW that's not in the mix of things for the moment, because they, at this point, have succeeded the contracts to all the Hasbro stuff. So they don't have ROM or Transformers or G.I. Joe or Action Man or Micronauts, all those things that you wore over at IDW for the past, I don't know, what, 5, 6, 7 years, are no longer there. Don't quote me the years on those because I don't remember exactly the time frame. COVID year messes me up, so I don't know.
I got you.
But as a thing, all those, yeah, so if it's a quiz show and they're like, "Hey, when was this thing a thing?" If those are two choices you have, 5 or 7, I mean, good luck.
That's a good point.
Good luck. Yeah. I wish you the best, because I don't remember exactly how one had them. But as far as returning things, we've seen Marvel doing a whole bunch of period piece books. We're getting ready to have a... Actually, we're just ordering it this month, so it's 2 months away still, but they're going to be doing a Return to Days of Future Past with Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, and it's a prequel to the original Days of Future Past, so we get to spend more time in that world leading up to the point where the event happens to time travel people back. So, I mean, that's neat. They've done a few others that were like timepieces. For a while, we had a series called X-Men Legends, and it was all inserts into time in the books. They weren't bad. There was a couple that were 90s ones. There were a couple that were a little earlier than 90s. Did I ever ask you how many Summers Brothers there are? Not Smothers. We're not talking about Yo-Yo Guys. We're talking about the, you know, because there's 4. I'm going to say, I'm going to guarantee you know 2.
I know.
The third one you probably know 2.
I know the third one. Well, the fourth one I had just heard of recently, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He showed up less than a year ago as an insert into time. The character already existed, so it wasn't a new character. But they limited him where he is now is because of those books. They also did a Gambit one, which is Gambit with a young Rogue, so it's before his first appearance in X-Men. And she was still a younger thief type on the streets of Cairo. And then we have one that just started for Storm. It is a period piece also, but it's she's older. So,
wow.
And then they did Wolverine Patch, which was during the time frame that X-Men was thought dead, and Wolverine's disguise was to wear an eye patch and a full piece suit. It was kind of making fun of Superman, kind of. I mean, that's what they were doing, the glasses, and they were kind of making fun of Superman. And that's Wolverine original series stuff, actually, Frank Miller. And the comic book series, we got rid of the suit fairly quickly. Whereas Wolverine Patch, the miniseries, it gets destroyed over time. The story's still good. It's written by Larry Hama, who was a writer for Wolverine back in the 80s and 90s. So
nice.
And a writer for G.I. Joe, mostly what he's known for.
Nice, man. Well, those will be those nice little divergence right there. Kind of nice little threads to follow till the end. I mean, it'll only be just a one shot, of course, but.
Well, yeah, they were the miniseries as well. They were most of them are four or five part issues, so they're not huge runs of anything really, but they've all been neat taste of things. And like depending what time frame of X-Men you enjoy, if you're an 80s 90s X-Men, then that first run of Legacy is perfect. They have all the 90s costumes, and it's cool. And the fact they did it without breaking the universe is really kind of impressive. When it comes to the other ones, they're inserts again. Like, they're books that happened, and we're doing one with X-23, actually, too, so it's a more modern one.
Nice.
But as far as, like, a whole franchise of things, they're kind of doing the Mandalorian thing, like setting back in time a little bit and doing events. That's what those things have been. So when it comes to ROM and Micronauts, I think probably the truth is that we're going to just get a re-release of the material that already exists probably at first.
Okay.
They haven't done an actual explanation of what is going to be. Now, could it be a return to ROM? Oh, man, would I like that a lot? Because even IDW's run of ROM I liked. Yeah, Tosha has one of my favorites.
Yeah, so, ROM. ROM's your guy, baby. You know, ROM's your guy.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as far as whatever that happens in Space Knight, that'll be fun. Speaking of the X-Men, are you enjoying the Beast's villainous turn right now as kind of the main? Ooh, it's dark and fun. It's fun, though. Really fun.
No, it's been interesting. And, like, it's man, it's one of those hallmarks that as much as Beast is kind of like the fun-loving fun guy, this is very different, and it looks like we're heading towards a close with that in the Wolverine books. But it's been wild, man. Like, when you think of counterculture to what the, or not counterculture, when you think to opposites of how people behave, I kind of wonder if the truth is going to be we're going to find out this hasn't been really, this has been the Dark Beast the whole time.
Yeah.
I mean, there hasn't been enough to believe that's the truth yet, but my brain's like, where is that dude at? Because he's still around. The white colored Beast.
Yeah.
Could he just dye himself blue? Easily. I mean, if the man can genetically alter himself, you tell me you can't get a pack of dye and get it match?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, it should be the easiest part.
There's probably a hairdresser out there that could help Hank McCoy with that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. That is a fun part. That's what I've been really enjoying, Steve. Yeah, I think the most simple reason, it's nice to see those ideas that you really liked back in the day, especially in Age of Apocalypse. I think, it was Donny Cates as well as Jason Aaron who did it really well with Thor. When they actually gave him that arm, you saw in those future stories they had invested in earlier in some of the runs they had made, like the Mighty Thor and whatnot. And to see that, you know, to see that callback, I think, to Age of Apocalypse right there, that's a great twist. It's a nice turn, and it's a wonderful callback that brings, I think, a lot of fans kind of back to points in the history that they loved about it. Because I'm speaking from experience. That's what happened to me. I'm like, oh, hell yeah, this is how it happens. Now I'm seeing it. It was fun to assume, but now that I'm seeing it, it makes for great stuff.
No, yeah. When all the pieces are doing that have been pretty neat over there, and they've been interesting spins to things. I mean, when it comes to ROM, I really do hope that leads to a new series. I think more the real truth is we're going to get the original series reprinted in a giant collection, which is what they're really doing first.
Well,
will that lead to more? I certainly hope so.
I think so too. I think it's certainly a area of Marvel's history that was fun. Maybe it wasn't as bright and flashy as some of the other eras that the comic book honks will weigh on, my friend, but I thought the late 80s, early 90s for Marvel was really good. Obviously, what happened in the early mid 90s with the Image thing, and then, of course, the stylization of comic books across the industry was a little different and a little tough to get past. But right before that, man, you're right. ROM, Micronauts, you had a brand new universe from Marvel pushing out. You had a lot of space, the cosmic part of Marvel getting into sharper focus, because that was when the Infinity Sagas were going on, and you had a lot of good Quasar and Silver Surfer stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's going to be a good time, my man. What about the other side of things before we call it a cast, my man? Is DC got any stuff going on or right now on the shelves at Top 5 that's just tickling your fancy?
Well, I mean, like we talked last time, the new Green Lantern's still a book I enjoy as far as a single issue. Number 2, Green Arrow came out, so both those books are moving along. There's also a batch of new heroes they're doing during this DC New Era of Heroes, or that's not what they're calling it, Dawn of the DC Universe, that's the titling. We have 3 new series that are all mini-series. One's called Spirit World, and it's basically dealing with the girl with the magical sword. There's another one called City Boy, which it just came out, and I don't really remember what the write-up said on it, but it literally came out, like, this week. Then there's another one called The Vigil, and The Vigil is about a team of hero types that, of course, are kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like The Watchmen, but not... They're not. It's not the same style of thing, but concepts. There's a little. They're basically trying to watch and keep, you know, heroes and villains both in line. Which so far only the first issue that is out of it. Also, all 3 of those are going to be mini series that run 6 issues. And as far as character appearances, the only time they showed up before this was during the event Lazarus Planet, and each of them made a cameo in different books. So.
As
be the ground point for them.
As a shop owner, kind of objectively, my friend, do you like the idea of Dawn of DC? Is it too soon since Rebirth?
Well, as far as branding, because it's just a nomen, I think because it's just a header, I think it's more confusing for people. I mean, Rebirth was kind of that way too. It doesn't not mean what they're talking about. I mean, we're getting a few different things out of it. Dawn of the DC Universe. We're getting it back to the underlings and these newer heroes, and we'll see how they go. I mean, if they do well enough, I'm sure we'll see them move forward at least a little bit. But they've done something similar before. I mean, we had the New Era of Heroes that happened, just after Death Metal. Or sorry, not Death Metal, just after Metal. And most of those heroes, while they're still around, they're not really in anything. So I don't know if that'll be the same with these new ones or not. And the idea of the underlings moving forward and taking a bigger step in books is fine. I mean, again, it's something that's got to be tempered, so we'll see, like, what that turns into. But we know along the lines of that, we also have Wonder Woman 800 happening, which it's not out yet. It's still got better part of a month before it happens. And then after that, we're going to get an event during the summer months, which is called Night Terrors. And Night Terrors, or Terror, Night Terror. No, that's an S. Night Terrors, that's right. Is going to basically be dealing with a new entity villain type that is going to make all of our heroes and some of our villains live through their worst nightmares. And as a result, most of our normal periodicals are going to stop, and we're going to get books replacing them. So we'll have a Night Terrors Batman, Night Terrors Wonder Woman.
Cool. I always love those concepts. Those are fun.
So most of those are two-part stories. There is a 4-part main storyline just called Night Terrors, where we're dealing with the brunt of the main focus of the story. And there's a couple one-shots that set that up and end it. So just like how Marvel does their Alpha and Omega, there's something similar to that.
Huh.
But that guy's going to be having through this summer. And then after we get past that, we're going to get a brand new Wonder Woman number 1 written by Tom King. So that should be interesting to see. It's still being heralded as part of the... Dawn to DC, or the new era of DC, Dawn DC. Gosh, there's too many names that get mixed up in my head. That's not good. Dawn DC.
It's all right.
It's late in the day. I didn't have enough sugar probably.
It's all right.
Dawn of DC Universe, the new issue is going to include Wonder Woman's daughter. So during the Tom King story, I guess we'll see how it develops. Leisure 800 is supposed to be your first appearance, so that's pretty cool.
Nice.
But the, as far as like event things, it's not like every summer needs to have a new chapter of titling, I don't think. But it does help separate some stuff. I mean,
right. Well,
if you look at the volumization of things, going from New 52 to Rebirth,
right?
Well, there's a clear design on the covers that makes this thing stand differently. Eventually, we drop the moniker and we start moving forward with normal books, and at that point, you know, we just kind of move forward. But at least at the beginning, it does make that a little bit easier because the designs in general help tell you where you're supposed to be.
Well, you know, Steve, my man, you know what that's great about having you in your life, in my life, and everybody else who loves comics lives? Because you're the man who we go to make sure we sort that all out. He's the guy you find at the corner of First and Orchard. Top 5 comics, get your stuff, get it going, get your summer reading list taken care of there. Obviously, there's a lot of fun stuff going on. My man, you go have a candy bar or something, you know, get them sugars up, get them levels up, and have a great rest of your evening, brother. We always appreciate the knowledge. We always appreciate the time, as always. You know, just one half of the men who look bad in spandex. It's always nice to have you on the cast, brother, man.
Heck yeah, man, of course.